Welcome to Unsquish the Fish, the podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff. Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
What's up, Dolphin fans? Sorry, I've been in a little bit of hiatus. I took a bye week along with the Dolphins, and then I took a little extra time, too. I am back with another episode, obviously, and I am here with Mika Romero from WatchNextYear.com. How's it going, Mika?
Hey, man, what's up? It's going good, bro.
Good, good, good. And it's interesting, there are a couple shows, or a couple of, you know, your website, my podcast, our names. Yours is Watch Next Year, because you said it's always like, as Dolphins fans, we're all like, yeah, I know, but watch next year, watch next year. That's what we'll be good, watch next year. And for me, it's Unsquish the Fish, which really doesn't need any explanation. Pretty basic there. It's been up until last week anyway, been pretty fitting. the angle we took at our different sites, man.
Oh, for sure, man. No, and I get that all the time. It's like, oh, like when I put up, like, let's say I put up an article or anything, it's like, oh, what's up with Watch Next Year? What about this year? I was like, guys, just please, just, they don't get it. Some people don't get it, you know? I've contemplated changing it, but yeah, man, this first month has definitely got people looking to the future, but the past couple of weeks have been interesting.
Yeah, for sure, man. So let's dig into that and see what we think. So obviously last week we had a huge, you know, uplifting victory, and we came out with emotion and we played hardcore with for Man Campbell, and it was just, everything was rah-rah for sure, and we definitely did some different things on the offensive side. Was more obvious with the I formations and the power running and commitment to the running game and all those things, and just put somebody in the fullback position there to do some lead blocking for us, all kinds of things, man. Like that we'd wanted to see for a while. But do you think, now that the dust is settled on all that newness, that is going to help us also get a victory, not just against Houston, but, you know, we got another, what, 11 games to go, right?
Yeah.
Think it can get us some more victories along the way, or was it just a one-time first week kind of phenomenon?
I mean, I hope it's not just a one-week thing. I mean, the way they played, it's crazy. Like, the way they played on Sunday, that's what we expected since game one. You know, it obviously didn't happen, but it's like, it kind of like confirmed us, like, yo, this team is talented. Look, you know, check it out, you know, check out what they could do. But then, I mean, I'm hopeful. You know, I'm crazy optimistic that this, you know, this could keep on turning. You know, we win next Sunday, we'll be back to 500, and, you know, 10 games, 500. I feel like we have a chance. Our schedule is horrible, but I feel like we have a chance. You know, I think that they'll.
Is our schedule that horrible, though, now that we look at it? I mean, we play new. What makes our schedule hard is what we didn't think last before the game started, or before the season started.
That is true.
We looked at teams like Indianapolis, Baltimore, and we were like, oh, crap, we're screwed. But we didn't – excuse me. But we didn't really consider – I mean, maybe we looked at Buffalo and thought they'd be better, but I don't think we considered them to be – well, I don't even know that they're that good now. I think they kind of started off like they were looking good, but now they're falling apart. The Jets are obviously way better than we thought they were.
The Jets are
4-1. So we got to play them one more time. We still have to play New England twice. We know they're obviously world beaters right now. I think our schedule still isn't beautiful, but – some of those teams we were going to play, it's not as ugly as it seems. So, and in a division game, even against the Jets, because we play them one more time, play Buffalo one more time, you never know what can happen in a division game. I mean, I'm not real confident that we can beat New England at this point. But beyond that, I think the schedule sets up for us to win. The problem is, we saw us play earlier in the year against some horrible teams and not play good at all, especially in Jacksonville. We didn't play well against Washington, even though we won. And it just wasn't pretty, man. Honestly, it just wasn't pretty. So what are your thoughts the rest of the year? Do we look more like the team against Tennessee, or do we look more like the team against everyone else we played this year?
My heart says I want to say that, you know, it's going to be Tennessee again, you know, but I just have to see it one more time. That first month was such a, you know, was such an emotional toll. Like, man, we got this. I mean, the Jags, look at the Jags game, 23-20, the Buffalo game, 41-14. That was, dude, if the Jags was the one that freaking, like, you know, knocked us around, that Buffalo game, man, I mean, just painful to watch that one. But, I mean, they came out last week. They came out on fire. You know, these guys look good. Dan Campbell, bro, that guy is, he may not know X's and O's as much as, you know, other coaches, but, man, he could tell he gets in with his players. You know, his players want to play for him, you know. But, I mean, I think we'll see this Sunday. This Sunday, they come out, you know, like, you know, guns blazing, like, ready to go. I think that the rest of the year is going to be pretty all right, you know. If they keep winning, they're going to keep buying into what this guy's saying, man. You know?
Agreed. I think this game, regardless of the team it's being played against, is more of a test for us for for a multitude of reasons. Number one, the emotion of having a new coach in rah-rah can only take you so far. You are not going to get through an entire season based off just that. So it's going to eventually come down to playing real football. It is going to come down to some X's and O's and things like that. So I think that's important. The one-on-one matchups, winning your one-on-one matchups. Now, I know that's something that this coach is preaching, but was it just good against Tennessee because they were so emotionally fired up? Or is it something he's truly doing technically during the practices that really can have a lasting week-to-week-to-week effect? I don't think that we know that yet. It's exciting, but yeah. I don't know if we know which one it is.
Yeah,
maybe against Houston we're going to see, but Houston's a tougher matchup. I mean, if you're going to line up in I formation and just try and slam the ball down their throat, the defensive line in Houston is better than the one in Tennessee. It just is, you know.
Yeah.
And I know that Juwan James had a good game. You know, he had a pretty good game against Tennessee. He wasn't really facing, oh, you know, a great player, but now he's going to be facing J.J. Watt, so that should be interesting. I'm hoping, though, the difference in that and where my frustration was before is now that we're running some more two tight end stuff and some more power stuff, that will give more help to the O-line, who still needs it. I understand that they put in Billy Turner and the O-line played a little better, but they still going to need some extra help, so hopefully some of that scheme change will give the help we need and not just leave Tannehill back there five wide. And, you know, when they go five wide with no run threat, you don't understand. It totally increases the effectiveness of the other team's defensive line because they know I don't have to worry about a run. I can just go as hard as I need to go at the quarterback. And it makes it so much harder for our O-line. It makes our O-line look worse than they even actually are.
And that's very true.
That's just part of the problem. So hopefully some of those things will help. But we are facing a little tougher opponent this week than we were last week. I mean, would you agree with that?
No, it's fish. I mean, the Texans come in with a 2-4 record, but yeah, that D line with Clowney and Watt, it's just, you know, Watt has been quiet this year. I mean, he has 4 sacks, but like at any one moment, like he could bust out a Cameron Wake and put up 4 to 5 sacks easily, you know.
And one of the best things he does is swat the ball down, JJ Swat, and that's one of Tannehill's kind of crutches, if you will, is that he seems to get the ball swatted down some. And I don't know when the last time we played them. I know that Tannehill played Houston his first ever game.
Yeah, I think that was the last time as well.
I just remember the ball getting swatted down multitude of times. Of course, that was, you know, 4 seasons ago in essence. But I'm concerned also about Arian Foster. I don't think Tennessee had a real run threat. In my opinion, they had 3 kind of guys, you know, schmoes, whatever, Sankey and a couple other guys. Now I think Arian Foster, even though coming back from the injury, he's not 100%.
Yeah, but he's getting there.
He's looking pretty good to me. You know, I mean, I know it was against Jacksonville. Again, you know, they're coming off a big win against a lesser team, a team we lost to, by the way.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And we're coming off a big win against a lesser team. We both have 2 wins. I mean, we're almost similar in the way the season, I wouldn't say, yeah, we are almost a little similar in the way the season is playing out right now, except for the whole coaching thing, the coaching change with the Dolphins. I mean, just the way it's kind of played out and the fact that I thought personally Houston was going to be a better team than they've shown so far. They to me have been like the other Miami Dolphins, like, man, what's going on with Houston? Even with an average quarterback in Hoyer, which is, I believe now Hoyer is their starting quarterback.
I think so too.
Again.
Yeah, he came in last game, correct? Like towards the end of the game?
Yeah, he came in like 2 weeks ago towards the end because Mallett had a little injury. Hoyer started catching on fire, and they didn't turn back. And I believe they went with Hoyer last week. Seemed to work well. So I think that they're going to go, which I think, honestly, I wish they were playing Mallett, because I think Hoyer's the better quarterback, in my opinion. So I wish they would just play Mallett, but because I think we'd have a better chance to win. I'm not a believer in Mallett. Well, Hoyer's not amazing, but he's better than Mallett.
Yeah.
So even with an average quarterback, I thought this team would be better than they are. But they kind of showed an uptick, too. They're pumped up, too. I think that Dolphins fans need to realize that Dan Campbell didn't just all of a sudden turn the Dolphins to what we thought they were. There was many other reasons last week why it all worked so well. That may not happen against Houston. Doesn't mean we can't get the win. It just isn't going to be 38-10.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What are your thoughts on it?
I feel the same way. I feel like it's going to be a grind, especially this game. I mean, I don't mind a low-scoring game with our defense. If our defense plays like to the percent, the only potential they could be playing, I feel like, you know, we're looking at around a 20-something, 14 game, something around that. But I feel like the things we did last week, with like Earl Mitchell, playing fullback. We saw a bunch of we saw Tannehill, finally take off for a run, a set run play.
Yeah.
Some rollouts. It's like things like that. It's like, I understand, Dan Campbell came in. But then, we're starting to run plays that actually make sense and work for our team, Instead of having, Tannehill sitting back there, three shot drops or, in the shotgun, have him move around, have him do a rollout, a pass run option. Just things like that, they can make, hell for a defense, but it's so easy to do,
I think that one of the keys to this game, honestly, is going to be when we started running the ball against Tennessee, it was pretty much like instant success. So, of course, they really didn't get away from it. I saw in the second half, at the beginning of the second half, they started to kind of go away from it a little bit. I didn't like the path they were taking, and they paid for it with some three and outs and some stalled drives. But then they got back on their game. They didn't, they didn't try and get too cute.
Yeah.
The key this time will be when you go and run the ball, and the first few times you got like a couple yards, you have to commit to it. If you go back to just throwing the ball with no run threat, you have no option for play action, and you're letting the defensive line just pin their ears back and come after your quarterback against a very suspect offensive line. So that's the key. Even if the success isn't what you hope, I mean, we've seen people say, well, you can't just run the ball three times and then go three and out. Oh, yeah? Well, I saw a Jets game where we threw the ball three times in a row, different times, and went three and out like five times in a row. So you tell me which is worse. At least with the run threat, you've got the possibility for play action. You've got the possibility to freeze those linebackers and help Tannehill clear the middle of the field, where against the zone, that is his number one strength, is throwing against the zone in the middle of the field. And it doesn't matter if it's 5 yards, 10 yards, or even 25 yards. It's not about the distance with him. It's about the type of throw you're asking him to make. You clear those linebackers a little bit, tucked in a little bit more to the D-line because of the play action. That one little half-second pause makes all the difference in the world for this guy. But if they run it a few times and get stuffed against a pretty decent D-line and go back to throwing the ball, we're going to lose this game.
What'd you call it? Yeah, I totally agree. But the thing is, I was looking it up now. Like, they're looking at some advanced stats and stuff like that. Have you seen Texas' D-line? They're against the rush. They're not as good as you think, They're right now 22nd overall on rush defense. And then their weakness is up the middle. You would think with Vince Wilfork, they'll have, a better chance of, just plugging up the holes. But up the middle, they pure, between the center and guard runs, they're averaging about 4.1 yards attempt.
I mean, I liked our chances then based off those stats, but
yeah, the thing is, making it happen, but the thing, it's there, that's their main issue right now. Like running up the guts, it's just they can't stop it. You may have these great pass rushers on the outside, but up the middle right now, they're a little squishy, man.
That's what I'm just saying. We need to know that, and just if we go three and out, and even if as the coaching staff needs to not give up on it, that's key. But as Dolphins fans, don't get so frustrated if in the first few drives you see some unsuccessful drives where we run the ball a bunch of times and we get stuffed. Just let them keep trying to figure out that run and run the ball. Eventually, you will break down a team doing that. You just eventually will. The key is, can our defense play like we played last week?
Yeah, that's going to be...
You know what I mean? Because if the defense can hold them, why we try and figure out this run game? Because I'm just telling you, I know that those stats you're giving me, I'm not feeling like we're going to go out there at least at the beginning of this game and just start running the ball down the throat like we did at Tennessee with the same success. I think it's going to take some time throughout the game to make it happen. I just don't want them to give up. And Dolphins fans, just let them keep trying to do it. If they go three and out, they go three and out. But the defense has to hold at least for a first few drives so we don't get down too much while we figure it out.
Yeah, that's true. And then, you know, we get like, you know, since the whole beginning of the season has this kind of shaken up already. Could you imagine? For down, like, you know, down by a touchdown or something, like something crazy like that. And then we completely start running the ball, like, three and out, three and out. You know Twitter's going to be on fire with people like, oh, what the hell are we doing? You know? It's going to have some flashbacks and stuff.
Yeah, they're going to be like, you can't just run the ball and go three and out. You know what? I'm just letting you know right now. Yes, you can. And if it doesn't happen, like, if we start having early success running the ball, Houston's in trouble. Houston's in trouble. If we can run the same kind of script we ran last week against Houston, they're in trouble. Because if we can sustain some drives, the Dolphins are going to win this game. If we run the ball a few times, have no success, and start throwing, Houston's going to win this game. And I just think that Dolphins are a little bit more talented than the Houston team, and I think we're more talented at a quarterback. I know many might want to argue that point based off what the season has looked like so far. I feel like we're definitely more talented at quarterback. I feel like if you can sustain some drives and use some play action, Tannehill can kill you, man. He can kill you on that.
Yeah.
On some of these little like zone passes that he does in the middle of the field. Like you saw some of those passes last week he did against to Rishard Matthews. So people want to say that Tannehill's not accurate, Tannehill's not this, Tannehill's not that. Those passes were what, 20, 25 yards on a rope. Not even a guy sitting there. Moving target. They had to be absolutely 100% precision passes. And he has to just sling them. And we've seen him do it. The one he threw to Kenny Stills on the sideline out of the back of the end zone.
That was very nice.
Mind you, those are not touch passes. Those are ones that just let him sling it into one little spot. I mean, he has such little room for error on all those throws. And he can make them all the time. The struggle with Tannehill is when you make him try and throw touch passes. It's not about 5 yards, 10 yards, 40 yards. It's about do you make it? Let him throw passes that are more like on a rope, just let it fly and just gun it in there, or are you asking him to throw up and over a safety or up and over, more specifically, a cornerback, like on the sideline or at the corner of the end zone? Man, we've seen him attempt that like 10 times this year. I don't think one has been caught yet.
It's not
his throw. It's not his game. He is not a touch quarterback.
Yeah, but that's okay though. You know, it's like, I think people need to realize that's fine. It's like that's like Peyton Manning. He's never gonna throw like a freaking, you know, bullet down the field 30 yards, but he'll get it in there. You know, it's just that's his style.
He's the opposite.
People get enamored.
Yeah, he's the opposite of Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning's all touch. I mean, that's all he is. He's just touch. He doesn't have the arm. Tannehill's the very opposite. Just. You give him a little spot and just let him throw it in there, just gun it in there, put it on a rope. That is what he does well, and it's not about distance. It's not. I hate when I hear these guys, and I even hear these guys on the radio try and group Tannehill into, oh, we just need to throw short little passes to the running backs and the tight ends. Have you looked at what his production to wide receivers has been the last few years? That is the biggest falsehood about Tannehill you could have, in that, oh, he can't throw the deep. No, it's not about throwing deep or not deep. It's about what kind of throw are you asking him to make? Is it that touch pass where you're asking him to kind of lightly throw it over a cornerback? Forget it. He don't have that.
Yeah.
Or are you asking him to catch a guy in stride perfectly, like on a rope, like whoosh, like the one to Kenny Stills, like we've seen him throw to Cameron. Like we've seen multiple throws like that where he can throw it as good or better than just about anyone in the NFL on certain routes and certain throws. And they're not easy throws. You're not limiting your offense, asking him to do what he does well. You're stupid, though, if you're going to continuously sit there and try and throw fades to the corner of the end zone or to the sideline. That's a waste of a play. It just is, because it's just not his game. I understand that maybe you need to keep him honest a little bit here and there on defense and throw it, but understand you're going to have very low success rate on plays like that from Tannehill, because it's not his game.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. No, and then the thing is, also the what's that stat called, the yards per average or through the air, stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
that's what frustrates. I was like, people, like, come on, man. Like 10 years ago, you think anybody knew about these stats, and they made a big fuss about it. Oh, he's only 6.8 or 7 or 8 yards per average. It's like, what is this, man? Like, the guy's fine. He's totally fine.
And a lot of that's not based on quarterback. A lot of that's based on just what kind of offensive structure you have.
Exactly. It's just the thing is, and it also like, oh man, what's his name? Big O on 560. I can't listen to that, man.
See,
talk about Dolphin hate, like Tannehill hater. The man could play like lights out. He'll still find something. Oh, but he can't throw like him in the long ball. It's just
yeah. Big O is one of the ones that I'm specifically talking about, man. Who lumps Tannehill into an incorrect category. He tries to make him like, oh, he's Alex Smith. No, he's totally opposite of Alex Smith. Now, he's not Big Ben. He's not Tom Brady. He's not Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. And he lacks a lot of the skill set that those guys have. It's not just about the production. He just doesn't have some of the throws those guys have. But you know what? Tannehill has throws some of those guys don't have, and that's just the truth. And he can do some things that those guys can't do physically. That's the truth. And they're not easy throws, and they're not easy routes. So let him do what he wants to do. And I saw a lot of that last week. We got to continue on. I saw a few of the times where they tried to do a little bit over the top, I think once to Landry, maybe once to Cameron, who didn't really try and go for it either. But
yeah, no, that miss to Landry was...
it was just an ugly-looking throw. And we've seen so many like that, but it's not about distance. It's about the type of throw. Is it touch? Or is it letting it fly? Yeah, I mean, those are the two things that you got to consider. If you let him just let it, throw him on a rope, he can make some amazing throws for us. But it has to come, to get back to the point, it needs to come from the play action. You let him try and do that, sit back there, we just throw 5 guys wide, one receiver is going to beat their man, and no, that's horrible. That's exactly. Horrible. And so, and then, I'm going to say this, everybody's saying, well, I guess it was Philbin and not Laser. Really? Give me a break. There was hardly a play on that playbook that even existed 2 weeks ago. You know what I mean? Al Saunders came in and said, no, here's what we need to do. And no one's going to come in from the outside and be your coordinator and say and put their name on a team that's failing. But they'll come in and give you some advice when, in essence, they're the true coordinator. And Bill Lazor's just doing what is said to be done between Philbin and Al Saunders, Campbell and Al Saunders, they're telling Laser, here's how we're going to run the game, you know. And so people want to say, oh, no, see, it was Philbin, it wasn't Laser, it was both of them. Laser sucks too, but now he's
gaining some guided direction.
He's giving more than direction. He's being forced into a corner saying, this is what you're going to do. We're not going to sit there and a bunch of times in a row and go 5 wide, empty backfield, and expect to have success. I mean, this isn't... You know what? He's not Peyton Manning. I mean, that's a Peyton Manning type offense, and I don't even know that Peyton Manning can really do that anymore. But it's two different types of philosophy. One is horrible, Lasers. The other is much better, what Campbell and Saunders have kind of put together, at least through 1 week. But it comes from the running game, and I'm going to keep preaching that all year. And I think all year what you're going to see is when the Dolphins win, it's because they committed to the running game and they didn't give up on it, even when it wasn't successful. When the Dolphins lose, they either didn't run it or didn't commit to it, didn't, you know, keep trying to run it, and they started throw, and that's when they'll lose. I'll be willing to bet you can put those two together for the rest of the season.
Oh, man, definitely. Definitely. And the thing is, it could mean we start getting blown out like that. Like, that's another thing with the, like, going back to, like, the scheme and stuff like that with the pass rush. People are like, oh, where's the pass rush? We were so behind in most of these games that, dude, you can't set anything up. You know, the team is just running it down our throats. Like, it's just, we would give it the defense was on the field for how long, but most of the game, like majority of the game, it's just, we got to an early lead last game and all of a sudden, oh, look, we have a pass rush. You know, all of a sudden it's like the whole format of the game changes. You know, it's just,
And
little things, man.
That flips the script there. And again, I'm going to go to Peyton Manning, but I'm going to go to the Colts' Peyton Manning. They used to say, and I used to hear all the time, that the defense in Indianapolis was built around Manning. And people were like, well, what does that mean? Manning doesn't play defense. How is a defense built around Manning? It's built to play with a lead. Your team's got a lead, so you're just going to just go after the quarterback hardcore. You don't have to worry about looking for the run. You don't really have to. I mean, play action's there, but it's not going to mean that much because you're down 14, 17, 21 points. So who cares if they're going to run the ball? We're going to let the linebackers try and worry about that. As a defensive line, we're going to just go after it. We're going to blitz. We're going to run blitz. We're going to pass blitz. And that's the kind of thing they built their defense for in Indianapolis, as opposed to you're playing some 7-7 game in the third quarter, and it's a different ball game. That's not what their defense was built for. That's why Indianapolis, when they were in a blowout, their defense looked great. Mathis looked exactly. great. But when they were, it was a close game, it wasn't the same effectiveness.
Yeah,
that's what needs to happen here with Miami. We started getting that lead, and it just started dialing up the pressure, dialing up the pressure, dialing up the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that in a closer game, like I feel the Houston game will be closer, that they can figure it out, because I'm concerned, still very concerned about the linebacking core of this team right now. I don't know how you feel about it, but they still have, with all the changes they made, they fired Kevin Coyle, you know, got a new defensive coordinator, they got a different head coach, they yeah. decided a different philosophy, they still had Kelvin Shepard in the middle. And it scares me, man. I love Jelani Jenkins, and I think Koa Meese can play, but I'd rather see Meese in the middle. And I know this sounds crazy from 2 years ago when everybody was complaining about it, but it makes me nervous with Shepard in the middle. I don't know how you feel about it.
The thing with Meese in the middle, I was also like one of those people. I wasn't complaining about it or like kind of like upset about it. The thing is, he would be your average NFL linebacker. He's not going to make this spectacular play, but he's going to be, you know, halfway solid with Kevin Shepard and what's the undrafted rookie's name? Virgil.
Yes.
Ah, man, I was
Vigil.
When he was in the game, I couldn't stomach it. I was like, man, he's undrafted free. Like, he just tells that he was just like reacting like way too late. You know, the game was moving way too fast for him. And Shepard's a career backup, man. It's a huge hole.
I think this defense would be, if they had any place on the entire team that they could really go out and find, and I hadn't looked at a list of available free agents of some guys with some experience that could put on some pads and figure out the scheme, and I'd love to see him go and just grab a linebacker, just one more guy that you could maybe somewhat trust to, at least not necessarily, maybe he's not as physically demanding or physically able as he was years ago, whoever that guy might be, but he could at least trust him to make the right decisions, be in the right places, understand what he's doing on the field. Because we lack that right now.
Yeah, we
got
that.
Two or three guys that can do that, and like that's it. And you put some of these other guys on there and these undrafted free agents and all that, and man, we're in trouble. We're just in trouble. Chris McCain is he's a hot mess. I mean, he's a scout team guy.
Yeah,
I mean, that's it. We thought he was going to be a. We thought he was a defensive end. They've kind of used him there, but he's a linebacker officially, and we thought he was going to be our starting linebacker this year.
God.
And man, he's just a scout. He's just doing the scout team. I mean, I know he got his name called out in the after the post game speech by Campbell because of the effort he put up against Juwan James and playing more of a defensive end role. But as a scout, I mean, but scout team, man, come on, you know what I mean? He's not exactly getting it done. You got Zach Vigil, you got what is his name, Hewitt. You have serious depth issues at linebacker. And so far, we've been okay. Kevin Shepard's not great, but beyond that, it's ugly. I think we need another guy.
It's duct tape, man. That's all it is.
It is at the linebacking
core. It's
duct
tape and bandages, man. That's it's like stop the bleed. Just anything to clot the bleed. That's it.
But we depend heavily, too heavily, as part of the problem, on our D line to have to four guys that have to stop the run. We just do. But if they don't stop the run, man. Besides Jenkins, and Meese makes a play here and there. At least we can usually trust on him to be in the right spot.
Yeah.
It gets ugly, man. Like, I think Kelvin Shepard is a huge liability for this team.
Oh, for sure.
I really feel that.
That's why you have what's his name, Rashad Jones. Like, do you see how many tackles he has?
Yeah, because they've got him pushed up so far. I mean, and he better be going to the Pro Bowl this year. He's been great, man.
Yeah, man. I was about to say that. I was about to bring him up, man. The guy's on defense every single game, the most intensity, man. Like, he's in your face. Not the biggest guy in the world, but man, he makes every freaking tackle, man. Every freaking tackle. And the thing is, if they jip him, man, for a Pro Bowl bid, oh man, I'll be so upset. You can't deny him this year, you know?
I don't think they'll deny him. He's been really great. I think he'll go to the Pro Bowl, and as long as the play keeps up, he'll go to the Pro Bowl, and he'll make the top 100 list next year for the NFL, in my opinion.
Last year was knocking on the door, and this year, man, he just like keeps elevating his game, you know?
Yeah,
just...
and he was one of the guys that when you were kind enough to let me write an article and put it on your website that one time, he was one of those second guys that we weren't really talking about, but I knew would have a big impact this year. I just didn't know that some of the guys we expected to have the biggest impact would have such a fall off. And that was part of why our team was playing so poorly. But let's see what happens this year, this week, I should say, against Houston and some of, you know, like Sue and Wake. I mean, Wake Fed. I believe he was AFC Defensive Player of the Week, of course. How could he not be with a performance like that, man?
With two forced fumbles and four sacks.
Four sacks. That's insane.
It makes me think, like, how severe was that? Was a hamstring injury? You know, he must have been. The sky opened up and all of a sudden, like, he just had a perfect day, or was he really messed up with that injury? Did it really slow him down that much, whereas he couldn't generate anything, or was just that bye week finally gave him a chance to just stop playing, you know, heal up and then come back, you know, to the Wake that we know? Or was it, you know, like, what was it? Like a comment? I know their tackle, you know, was like, I think it was a rookie tackle or he was like a backup,
mm-hmm.
But, man, he was completely different. Like, come on, like, that's vintage Wake we saw on Sunday, you know? Just
that was the Wake, almost beyond the Wake. That was the Wake we were expecting to see when you have a guy like Sue on your team, clogging up the middle and taking two or three blockers, and you try and defend Wake one-on-one. And that was probably one of their issues, because Wake had been so ineffective. I'm sure they were thinking, oh, well, we can stop this guy one-on-one because he's been stopped one-on-one all year. But that didn't happen.
and he was close to getting some sacks. He was just like a half second behind Wake. Sue was about half second behind Wake. He was like he had this one. I can't remember what it was. I think it was in the second quarter where he shed a double team so fast, but Wake was already in there. But I just think that man, I don't know. I just think that hamstring injury was a lot worse than what they were saying. You know, because the guy had, man, it just looked different. You know, it looked a lot different, him getting off the ball.
Yeah, you know? I mean, a lot of players look different, but something that's interesting for this week is it looks like, I'm thinking, Bryce McCain's not going to play. I mean, he hasn't participated in practice yet.
I've been on top of that. They haven't mentioned anything. He sat out yesterday. Jamar Taylor was taking reps with the first team, but they haven't. They say it's a sprain,
mm-hmm.
but nothing at all.
And then, like, and then I think Zach Bowman has also been out of practice, if I'm not mistaken, or at least injured. Yeah. So what does that mean for the nickel cornerback spot? I mean, we're looking at what, Bobby McCain?
Maybe.
You know what I mean? And possibly, I mean, we got some issues.
Yeah, I think we kind of got helped out because the Cecil Shorts, I think their second receiver, he's out. He's out for Sunday.
Well, that will help us some because Cecil Shorts is a decent receiver, but DeAndre Hopkins will be tough to handle. No,
he needs to be double teamed. This guy is having a monster year, man. Especially with, can you imagine if he had at least a solid quarterback, what he would be doing?
He's
playing with Hoyer Mallet. He has freaking, what is that, 52 receptions, like 700 yards, 5 touchdowns already?
And hasn't that been the story for the Texans for years? Because exactly, they right? had he's Andre Patrick Johnson Jr. in his prime. He is Johnson Jr., nice. and they played in his prime, or he played in his prime all those years, and you know, he had no quarterback really at any time. I mean, here and there he'd have bits and pieces, and didn't they have Matt Schaub or something for a little while, and a few others that were halfway decent. But Hopkins is now going through that same struggle in Houston, and I hope all the talk has stopped with everybody was mad that we didn't get Andre Johnson. Yeah, you know, he's just been all right. He hasn't been anything special in Indy. I mean, Indy's having its struggles anyway, but. He hasn't been like, oh my god, how did we pass up on this guy? Nah.
And also, you know, what's his name? Oh god, what is his name? The lineman from Denver.
Oh yeah, Mathis.
Where's Mathis, man? The guy, he's a scrub.
Yeah, well, he wasn't worth what he wanted anyway, and he should have stayed in Philly. Although I have this feeling Philly would have cut him anyway.
Yeah.
But somehow, because he wanted to be cut so bad, he wanted it to look like it was on his own terms. I think that's made it look worse for him because now he looks stupid. And we look fairly smart for being stubborn on that.
Yeah.
And not pulling the trigger on it. And I'm not that the guards we've had have been much better, man. They were like the bottom two ranked guards, Thomas and Douglas. Man, I'm nervous. You would think, even though Douglas is a rookie, I mean, you got to come in and be like the worst guard in the NFL. Man, that doesn't, I don't care if you're a rookie or not. I guarantee you there's other teams out there right now that have rookie guards. I don't know who they are, but I promise you there are teams with rookie guards, including, I believe, in New England. And, man, they're not the worst in the NFL. That's horrible. But the fact that you had the worst, at least rated PFF, whatever. Yeah. But at least two guards playing bad, isn't necessarily that, oh my God, by some amazing coincidence, we actually have the two worst guards in the NFL. But it's more about the scheme, the way the team's playing. And I'll go back to the fact that you put so much pressure on your guards and your O-line when you continuously just go five wide, don't run the ball, don't even threaten to run the ball. You know, you keep doing that over and over and over again, and all the defensive line has to do is just, when the ball is hiked, push as hard as they can to the quarterback. They don't even have to consider a running game. Yeah. That is part of why those guards look so bad. That's the truth. You start running the ball. You start running the ball. You start throwing it off a play action. And you run the ball at the middle, you run the ball on the sides, you know, you on the outside, on both sides, you keep doing that over and over again. Yeah, you know what? When you do decide I'm just going to pass the ball, even if it's not play action, but you're going to throw the ball, you're going to just they're going to have a better time, because at least that half second of I still have to make sure they're not running the ball, it makes the difference and makes them not look so bad. The offensive scheming in the game, in the play calling of Bill Lazor, and you can sit there and tell me it was Philbin. I don't believe it. Philbin didn't call plays in Green Bay. I don't believe that Lazor was hamstrung by Philbin with the play calling. I believe that play calling was all 100% on Lazor. 100%. And that 73% of the time we were throwing the ball, you do that 73% of the time, whatever team you are, your guards will look like garbage as well. The bottom line, they will.
No, thank God for Billy Turner, huh?
Yeah, well, he was there the whole time. And Philbin, always, forget the personnel decisions. He would always take the 53 guys he had and make the worst decisions on who starts and who sits. He would have Billy Turner not even activated, or Phillips not even active. Like, the decisions he made with his roster were just terrible. Terrible decisions. Terrible of who was starting and who wasn't. I don't know what he would base his decisions on, but it obviously was not the play on the field. It's just so stubborn. He would see something and he would ignore it and say, no, this is where I'm comfortable. It was all about him being comfortable. I guess he was comfortable losing. Apparently he was comfortable getting fired, and now he's comfortable putting his house up for sale in Davie. I hope he's comfortable with the rest of his life doing things that don't work out and that are stupid.
Line. Man. He just went with his gun. That's it. And it cost them. Like, first with the offensive coordinator who refused to fire, they forced his hand. You know, with Mike Sherman.
Yes.
And then if he would have fired, if he would have fired him, like, that's like, what, 2-3 years ago? When was that? That was 2013?
Well, he started 2012 is when this regime came in.
Okay, so what, 2014 we fired? No.
So Mike Sherman got fired after 2 years. So he was the offensive coordinator for 2012 and 2013. Then they fired Sherman and brought in Lazor for the 2014 season.
Yeah.
So this is Lazor's second season.
Yeah, the thing is, it gets to a point where everybody and their mom knows it's not working, but he's still like, all right, this is my guy, I'm going to stick with him. The same thing with Coyle. Coyle should have been fired last year. After that crazy collapse last year, he should have been fired.
He should have, it's correct. And that's part of why he was the first to be fired, beyond the fact the defense was playing horribly. That's part of why he was the coordinator to go, and Lazor got to hang on, because they've already fired one offensive coordinator. So they weren't going to fire another, and I guess they weren't going to fire their head coach and both coordinators. Lazor's lucky to be here. You know what? Anybody that wants to tweet me whatever and have this argument with me, I will argue for as long as I can. And, Simon Clancy from the BBC, me and him we went back and forth on this way before even Philbin was fired. He was telling me, oh, Lazor's respected, he's this, he's that. Really, he's respected? So why didn't they make him the head coach if he's respected? Exactly. Why in the heck is Al Saunders there guarding over him if it was Philbin all this whole time? No, because Lazor is as much, or if not more, garbage than Coyle was. Don't trust Lazor. The good thing that it's Saunders and Campbell just kind of coming together and decide, no, this is our game plan, Laser. You're just going to hold this little card that has the games, and you're going to do what we tell you to do, because you've already been doing what you want to do, and what you want to do has cost this team big time. And made Tannehill look horrible, so that all his, you know, his haters can go out there and say, see, I told you Tannehill was horrible. No. No offense, no quarterback, just about no quarterback beyond the greatest of the greats could be put in the situation that you've put Tannehill in this year, with your 73% times of throwing the ball on empty backfields and have success. I'm sorry, nobody.
That's true. Yeah, man, he's on double secret probation, man. He's really. I want to know what the sense is, like, behind the scenes of this team as far as like personnel goes, because I know Dan Campbell's a coach, but the thing I like about him is that you could tell he doesn't have an ego. Like, you could tell he'll tell you straight up, this is what I know and this is what I don't know, and yes, that he actually uses his coordinators and the people around him, like Alexander, to help him make these decisions. Like, he's not like on an ego trip, like, oh, I'm the man now.
No, he just wants to win.
He wants to win. And, you know, he bypassed a lot of people that have been coaching a long time to get this job. It's because, you know, when Philbin got fired, I guarantee nobody said, oh, Dan Campbell, he should be next coach.
No, it wasn't. Not me. The only person I thought was Rizzi. I mean, my thought was, if you looked at this, I thought, well, maybe Rizzi. And then somebody had mentioned Campbell, and I loved Campbell, but I didn't think for a second they'd make him the head coach. I'm not going to lie about that. I love that they did. I just didn't think they would.
And then the next move that he made was to make him assistant head coach. Like, the one that we all thought was going to be the coach, all of a sudden he bumps him up to assistant head coach. Mind you, there was no assistant head coach on his team, which is weird because there's usually an assistant head coach on.
That was the Philbin yeah, control thing. I mean, he was a super control freak, more so than he needed to be. But let's talk about that kind of interesting thing there with Rizzi and Campbell. So Rizzi's the assistant head coach, and him and Campbell will be making the decisions together on things like timeouts, yeah, and throwing the red flag and yada yada yada, which is interesting. Campbell, that's pretty much Campbell saying, I know that I don't have the experience with this, and I want somebody who I can trust a little bit more. And I also like that he said, I will listen to Rizzi, and I will only listen to Rizzi. Yeah. Like, he's not going to create a situation where he's got five assistant, you know, five coordinators and stuff coming at him and say, no, you need to do this, no, you need to do that. So they purposely made sure they created a system where just the two of them will make the decisions. But unfortunately, both of them showed some inexperience on a couple occasions. In a 38-10 game, not going to make that big a deal. In a game that's going to be close like Houston, I hope that it doesn't make the difference. Of course, we saw Philbin with 3.5 years of experience make stupid decisions with his timeouts. Even up to the end, he was still had not figured out how to manage that. So
how many games? Like 3 games last year. Yeah, timeout in Green Bay. Like, it's just,
I know.
It's their first game yesterday.
I'll cut Campbell and Rizzi some slack in knowing that they realized instantly, whoops, that was a mistake. Or whoops, that was a mistake. So hopefully they're going to get it straightened out. I think they will. I don't see the stubbornness in them.
Oh, not at all.
Like we did with Philbin. So
I just think it's like driving like a Ferrari. You know, you just get in there, all of a sudden, you know, you hit the gas, you're in third gear already. Like, oh shit, it's moving kind of fast. You know, it's just that first game jitters, like, you know. But I feel like these guys, the thing is, there's no ego there. And the fact that they could go to each other, or at least Campbell could go to, you know, the people with more experience and say, hey guys, help me out. I feel like this makes it, you know, 10 times better. I couldn't expect that. Like, I thought when he was coming in there talking, like, oh, this guy's a man, he's going to be like, you know, he's going to put his hammer down, that's it. But the thing is, he knows what he knows, and he knows what he doesn't know, which, you know, you can't, like, it's a lot better, man. It's 10 times better, more than I could have ever expected.
It is. So what do you think? What's your prediction for the game against Houston this Sunday?
I think fairly low scoring. If Hopkins gets away for, like, you know, two or three long receptions, it might make it, you know, a closer game. But I feel like, dude, they have so many players out right now.
They do have quite a few players out, but it's not really their key players. I mean, is there anybody that when I looked at the injury report, I didn't see like a key guy that I was like, oh man, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Besides maybe Shorts.
It's mostly the role players. Shorts is out, the second receiver. Jackson, one of the DBs, is out. Clowney has an ankle injury, so he might be, you know.
Is it the same injury, or is this a new injury?
No, I believe it's the same. It's the right ankle.
Yeah, I think he's just on the report, but he's been playing, so I don't know that. It's these injuries that teams have had. Like, for instance, we have Brandon Albert on ours with the hamstring. Well, that's a hamstring he's had. He played last week. There wasn't any issues. He played pretty well, even though he wasn't really going against any phenomenal competition, which was a great first game back for him, actually, to not be going against somebody phenomenal. But I'm trying to figure out for them who's new on there and who's not. Like, they have a couple guys on there that are in full practice participation, a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
So I see a guard. I don't know who Brandon Brooks is. I don't know if that's a starting guard for them or just some schmo. I have no idea. Jadeveon Clowney, now I see he did not participate in practice, so that's interesting.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if that means he maybe not going to play, and I don't know how. I mean, he obviously hasn't been what everybody thought he was going to be. They were telling him, hold out a year, don't play college, just hang out. And, you know, he's come to the NFL, and because of injury, at least, it hasn't really worked out for him so far. I don't know if it's a talent thing or just the injury, but we'll see. I'm just trying to see who else on here.
I see Nate Washington there. That's their third receiver with a hamstring.
Yeah, but he's full participation, so you assume he's going to play. Like I said, they've got some injuries. I just don't see anybody on this list beyond Cecil Shorts that's anything that's going to be a big-time effect on us. For us, I'm concerned about, Bryce McCain. That's a big one, and he looks like he's going to be out. And Zach Bowman. It's a non-injury-related issue that he did not – maybe he wasn't even actually out from an injury. Maybe he was just out of practice that day for personal reasons. Let's just hope that's the reason. I didn't hear why, so – I know that's sad, though, that we're sitting there. I hope Zach Bowman can play. I mean, we just got to realize, guys, and I want everybody to realize, I know we all thought this team was going to be something real special at the beginning of the year, and then we got shocked, and then all of a sudden Campbell comes in. See, that's the team I thought we were. Man, we still got holes.
Yeah.
We got some holes. We got offensive line issues, linebacker issues, and secondary issues. I mean, that's a lot, man. That's a lot to overcome. Against better teams, and I won't even say Houston's a better team, but, you know, in 2 weeks, New England.
You never know.
Exactly. New England's going to know what to do with those holes, man. They're going to know. Brady's going to know how to try and get somebody matched up on Kelvin Shepard or whoever Jamar Taylor is going after, or how to go after Akins. He's going to know how to take advantage of those matchups, man. Don't have delusions. He can shred this team right now. If we don't get some better play from these guys that have not been playing good.
The thing I'm hoping for is, like, since it's a short week, maybe. You know how these Thursday games are. Like,
I think that's a huge advantage for us.
Exactly.
I think it is the best advantage we have.
Next thing you know, it's like, the Dolphins are killing the Patriots.
The best chance we have at winning this game is because it's going to be on a short week, man. I'm happy about that. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm so happy it's a Thursday night game because that's the best shot we have. At taking advantage of these guys.
And then, I mean, it could go vice versa as well. I mean, we could get destroyed.
but the likelihood of that is probably less, and it's more likely that it's a muddled, ugly game that stays a little close. Not to jump ahead and look past Houston.
I'm thinking, you know, somewhere around the range, like, you know, 24, 27, you know, Dolphins. Like 14-17 Texans. It depends. I don't know. You know how calling these games are. It's hard. But I'm thinking, you know, they break late, you know, end of the third quarter around there. But I feel like it's going to be, you know, you have Foster coming back. And then this like you said earlier, this D-line hasn't been tested by a true running back. Mm-hmm. And Foster's getting his legs under him already. So, you know, he's starting to make moves. So, if he gets going, it'll be interesting how we pull this off, but
so I'll give some predictions of the game, and I'm just going to predict the game based on how it goes. If the Dolphins come out and stay committed to the run, even if they don't find the success they'd like to at first, like they did with Tennessee, they found instant success and Tennessee was in trouble right away.
Yeah,
if they can do that and at least stay committed to it for a few two, three drives and try and figure it out a little bit, even if they're running, if it's just 3 yards, 4 yards here and there. I think they'll win this game as long as we're not getting shredded by Foster. If we're getting shredded by Foster, we better be shredding them with Miller, or we're not going to win this game.
Exactly.
If they come out and they do it once or twice, go three and out, and decide, oh, we just need to throw more, that's it. The game's over. We're going to lose. I'm just telling you right now, we will not win a game that way. We will not win any game this year with the kind of game plan that we were playing the first 4 weeks. We will not win a game. I promise you that. Yeah. You look at our schedule, there isn't a team left on our schedule that will allow us to win a game that way. It just won't happen. So I'm not going to give a prediction of score, win, or loss, because I don't know if they're going to be able to withstand the fact, if it happens, that they continuously run the ball for some drives and they might get stuffed, because I have this feeling it's going to happen. I just the way I see it, the question will be, can you push through it and can you figure it out? Can you figure out how to run the ball in Houston? If you can figure out how to run the ball in Houston, put us in second and short, third and even shorter situations, I'm excited. I think we'll win because I think we're a better team. You go the other way? Nope. And that's just how I feel about it. So we're going to see. This is going to be more of a test for this coaching staff than we've seen before. And that's true. And we're really going to see who's pulling the strings on the offensive side of the ball in this game.
No, yeah.
In my opinion. And it'll be a totally different world when we play New England, honestly. It'll just be a totally different world. But this one, I think it's pretty clear cut what the script will look like and how it will go each way, in my opinion. I don't know how you feel about it.
No, I feel the same way. If Foster takes off, it's not even his running threat. It's, man, the guy catches a lot of passes as well. You know, it's just, if we could sustain and hold him down, like, he's the focal point to their team. You know, I know Hopkins,
yes,
he's great and all that, it's just because he's gaining a lot of targets, but like Foster, if Foster gets going, that whole team opens up. You know,
as we saw last
Poyer
week. As we saw last week, they figure out a way to get Foster involved in this offense. And even though he's not quite what he used to be, and he's still coming back from an injury, man, you're right. You're 100% right. This team just relies on Foster so much. And I remember 3-4 years ago when this team was Foster. Yeah. I mean, like 60%, 65% of their offense, either running or passing, was through Foster. They were like, it was kind of like Jamal Charles was for Kansas City. And Kansas City hasn't been good anyway, but now you see without Jamal Charles, man, I don't know if they win another game. I mean, they're in trouble. They're in trouble big time. But we're going to see how well we can contain him. We can contain Foster and run the ball even decently and commit it to that running game. Yeah, we'll win this game. We will. If he shreds us for 150 and catches 10 passes out of the backfield, we're in trouble. Unless we can, and the way we avoid that is to keep him off the field.
Exactly.
If he gets 150 yards and 10 passes, guess what that meant? That meant we were throwing the ball a lot. Tannehill was getting sacked. We were punting and putting them back on the field because he doesn't get 150 and 8-10 receptions sitting on the sideline.
Nope.
You know, for more than half the game. We got to control the clock. And the first half of the year, we were one of the worst teams in time of possession until the Tennessee game. Because we refused to run the ball. So not only, and you think, well, three and out is three and out. Oh, no, it's not. Three and out running the ball ain't the same as three and out throwing the ball. Because incomplete passes stop the clock.
Exactly.
And running the ball keeps the clock going. So at least you're using up more of the clock on your three and outs or your six on your six and outs. You sound like you got an excited dog back there.
I know.
He's excited about the game too.
I'm trying to run away.
So it is actually different. Even if you have some limited success on offense, you still want to be running the ball as much as possible. I mean, we've seen now, at least just one game, what it does for this team and what it does for Tannehill. He can't just sit back there and just throw. I think it's proven he's not that guy. But, man, you let him come out of some play action. You let him do a little bit of option. You let him run it here and there, do a bootleg here and there. You mix it up like that and let him do those things. Oh, man, he can kill another team. Yeah, he'll make some mistakes here and there, of course. But he can definitely dissect the defense. If you give him a game plan like that, as opposed to line up five wide, let's be Oregon, and just throw the ball. No, sorry, this isn't college, and Tannehill's not that guy.
Exactly.
All right, man. You said you had an article you recently wrote about comparing. Well, you had written one at the beginning, Tannehill kind of comparing to Wilson, and you got killed for it. But now that we're seeing that without that, you know, that starfire defense, Russell Wilson isn't just putting the team on his shoulders either and getting it done as many thought he would. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that article, man?
Yeah, I wrote one, say about 2 months ago, like right around right around when Tannehill got his huge extension, and everybody was like giving him crap for it. You're like, oh, why are you gonna give, you know, so much money to some proven guy, while, you know, Wilson was like kind of struggling with the Seahawks to get paid. And, you know, and then, you know, obviously, you know, he did sign, you know, Russell Wilson did sign his extension, which for like 60, I think it was like 60 million guaranteed or something, something crazy like that. And then I go ahead and write this article saying like, there's literally not much difference between these two. You know, I feel like they're both right now at this point in their careers, you know, game managers, you know, until, you know, until one could actually break out. But what I was saying is that Wilson gets so much help from that defense and from Lynch, like in the first article, that all he was required to do was just make, you know, a few throws here and there, and then he'll be okay. You know, they had so much success and so much talent around him.
They used the right game plan with him, in other
exactly.
words. They gave him a good run game. Obviously, they gave him a good defense, but they gave him a good
position,
run game.
Yeah,
you know?
They put him in a position to you know, to succeed.
And then, play action and things like that. Like what we've been talking about for an hour.
Exactly. And then now that I'm thinking, like, now you saw Cam Chancellor, you know, out for the first, what, 2-3 games mm-hmm. of the season. And then all of a sudden that defense wasn't there. You know, Marshawn Lynch completely, you know, just, I think he was hurt. Like, he was like a hamstring injury.
Yeah, he's been hurt a lot of the season, hasn't played some games.
You know, he's been hurt. But then all of a sudden you see Wilson by himself, and they're 2-4. You know, all of a sudden the magic's not there anymore. Like, he's required to do a lot more, and he just simply, he's too short. He can't see over the line. He's getting sacked. I think he's up to 24 sacks already this year.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
you know?
So what you're seeing then is when you take a quarterback, like, and I like the comparison. I love the comparison because you were comparing Tannehill to Wilson and with 52 totally different guys around him in a totally different coaching staff, and trying to say, see how much better Wilson is than Tannehill. When I say you, I mean people.
Yeah.
You know, that's what people were doing, pundits and fans were doing. But it goes just to show, and I will say this, had you put Tannehill in Wilson's spot and Wilson's in Tannehill's spot, the results would have been the same. Well, Tannehill would have been in 2 Super Bowls, and Wilson would have, you know, 160 sacks through 4 years. And that's the way it had gone. Because but now they have different skill sets.
Exactly,
Tannehill,
yeah.
Like we talked about, he can throw it on a rope. He can make some really nice throws with his arm and do some things physically with his arm that Russell Wilson cannot do. But Russell Wilson has a natural touch of the football that you don't see from a lot of quarterbacks. So he has that going for him that Tannehill does not, but he can't make every single throw like Tannehill can. He just can't. I have not seen it yet. I have not seen him make some of the throws that Tannehill can make, but I know I've seen him make throws that Tannehill cannot make. That's for a fact. And I think Russell Wilson has some of the nicest touch on the deep ball of any quarterback in this league, even compared to Aaron Rodgers. It's maybe like more like he's more like a Big Ben with that.
Exactly.
He makes some real nice. But guess what? When you have a really bad O-line, you can't let those plays develop when you got a guy in your face in 2 seconds, and that's what Russell Wilson is going through right now. Much of what Miami will go through, or what Tannehill goes through, and why he struggles some with some of these routes that have to develop a little bit further, whether they're a touch pass throw or not, he doesn't have the time because the O-line can't hold it. So that's where Wilson is right now.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, I was saying, like, what really got people going was the first time was I said that Wilson was like a Mark Sanchez with the Jets his first 3 years. You know, like, look at Mark Sanchez now. I'm not saying he's the talent. Like, obviously, I believe Wilson's a lot more talented than Mark Sanchez.
I would say so.
But I'm just saying, like, the team aspect of it, with the right scheme and the right people around you, you know, you could get a lot more, you know, team success, which is, you know, apparently will give you like more personal success. Then people realize, like, maybe, you know, he's not a world beater as we all think he is. Maybe he's just like a product. Like, I'm not saying like a complete product of his like surroundings, but man, that those 3 years is when he was there, when the Legion of Boom, the way they were playing, and Lynch.
Yeah,
dude, the guy was, come on, they, fourth quarter, it was over. If they were close or ahead, there's no way of stopping that man.
So let's talk about some, and we're going to do a quarterback comparison here, and this is going to be basic. There are quarterbacks that concede and really look good under certain situations in certain team environments, coaching environments. I think Tannehill is one of those. Andy Dalton is proof of that, and I think we're starting to see Russell Wilson is proof of that. Versus there are quarterbacks that just make it happen regardless of what's going on around them, and when they're gone, it is so so easy to see the team is not the same. Ben Roethlisberger, as much as I dislike him.
That's number one.
Yeah, because that's showing itself right now. Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. You can put those three guys in any situation at any time, and somehow, some way, they're really going to make it happen. You know, you can put those guys on the Dolphins or today's Seattle or maybe a few years past Cincinnati that wasn't as good, and they're going to have more success. But the other three, Wilson, Tannehill, Dalton, Alex Smith is again, that's showing itself. The defense wasn't playing as good. They weren't running the ball as well. Now Jamaal Charles is gone. He's hot garbage, man. He's hot garbage. As simple as that. He is simply a guy that can get it done in the right situation. Tannehill, we want him to be that elite guy that can just take it and just do it regardless of the situation. But it's not there.
Yeah, there's so few. There's so few like that. You know, it's just.
Yeah, you can't. It's not fair to.
It's a special talent.
It's not fair to compare them to. You want to blast somebody? Blast the people who passed on Brady for six rounds for the Dolphins. You know, you blast the guys who didn't draft Aaron Rodgers. Blast the guys that didn't. I mean, none of these guys were like first overall pick. You didn't have a shot to get them. None of these guys were that. They were all guys that just got passed over longer than they should have in either the first round or, in Brady's case, round after round after round. So we all had our shot at it. So you want to blast somebody for not having a quarterback like that? Don't dog on Tannehill. Dog on the people who made the decision to not draft those guys. Not that I don't not like having Tannehill. I love Tannehill. Yeah. I think he's good enough with the team around him. See, Russell Wilson, Andy Dalton, Alex Smith are all proof that if you put the right team around a quarterback, you can win with a guy who's a little better than average. Yeah. Or just breaking into the top 10 or whatever you want to call Tannehill. So Omar Kelly, you're wrong. Big O, you're wrong. You guys are simply wrong. It is being proven right now in front of our eyes that the team around a quarterback makes so much more difference. You think you're smart because you'd say he's not Brady, he's not Aaron Rodgers. Ooh, you're so smart. That was such an amazing analysis by you. Are you writing a book about football? Can I read it? You know, come on, give me a break. That is not even smart analysis. That's just going on there and it's just being so Captain Obvious, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson is pretty much a fairly average quarterback when you put a fairly average to maybe even below average team around him. Bottom line, he ain't Roethlisberger. Sorry, he's not going to just take the team and say, let's do this. That's not going to happen. There's three or four quarterbacks like that in the league. Peyton Manning's not even one of them anymore. If that defense wasn't playing how it's playing, it was an average defense, like they would be horrible. Horrible right now.
They can't stay on the field. He can't make, you know, he's old, but and the thing is, I want to go backtrack to Big Ben. You know, we all made a big deal on Antonio Brown. Look at Antonio Brown now. You know? Antonio Brown, he can't.
Yeah, Ben Roethlisberger makes Antonio Brown. He even makes Le'Veon Bell a little bit. Exactly. I mean, he makes that team, man. He's one of those, unfortunately, runs, one of those special quarterbacks. But you know what? I don't know that he was 5 years ago. He's kind of developed into that over the years. Even during their Super Bowl wins, he made some amazing plays, but they had a great team around him. Now he's proven that the team around him isn't all that great. But with him, boy, he sure makes them all better.
Yeah.
Come on, am I missing anybody? Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, what other quarterbacks really, truly can put a team on their back regardless of the situation, regardless of the teams around them, and really, truly make everyone around them better? Who am I missing?
I don't know. I think.
Maybe Tony Romo? I don't know. that's tough to say.
That's a stretch.
That's a little bit of a stretch.
Even him with a solid team has come up short.
I mean, we definitely can't say Andrew Luck right now. I'm sorry. No. Maybe you would be willing to say that before the season started, but right now I can't say that. Drew Brees a year or two ago.
Drew Brees,
he's started to decline some. He's gotten older. His play has declined. But before his play declined, he was that guy. He could do it. No matter what. He put the team on his shoulders, and they could make it happen with his abilities. Philip Rivers, no. I mean, he's not really been – he's good, but he's not great. He needs a better team around him to really, truly have success. Very few quarterbacks do not need that. It makes them better, but they don't need it. Two or three guys, that's it.
I'll throw a name at you that it might – I mean, I'm not sure. Cam Newton right now.
Yeah, his man, he does it so differently, but he really does.
It's a little unorthodox, but
it is. It's different than what we're used to seeing.
Can you name anybody on that team? Can you name anybody on that team right now?
No, I mean, I can name them, but they're not good.
I mean, you have Greg Olsen, John, tight end.
Jonathan Stewart. I mean, that guy's Jonathan Stewart, Ted Ginn Jr. I mean, come on. I mean, really? You know, Greg Olsen's good. Like you said, Greg Olsen's good. They got a few decent players on defense. I'm not even sure who they are, but I'm sure that they do. And because they're 5-0, they can't have the worst defense in the league, I guess. He's a great example because he just keeps doing it every year. He just kind of puts a team on the back and goes, yeah, he's probably a good example of a guy who, if he came off that Panthers team right now, I don't know if they'd have a win.
Exactly.
Like, he's worth a win every time he steps on the field.
Yeah, I wouldn't put him, like, straight up there with the top three guys. But
No. I can't. I don't know why. I just can't do it.
He might be, you know, his style's unorthodox. He's like a running quarterback, but yet, man, that pass he made for that touchdown win last week to Olsen.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a nice throw.
You know what I think is the difference between the other three guys we mentioned is if Cam Newton came in and could do it in the playoffs, I'd put him in there. Yeah. I think that's what we haven't seen is we've seen it in the regular season. We just haven't seen it in the postseason yet. So I'm not ready to anoint him to that. He comes in and he can really get some wins the way he's winning now with just pretty much Cam Newton being Cam Newton.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he could do it. And the reason we make this point, the reason we keep saying this is stop talking about how Tannehill isn't this and Tannehill isn't that. 95% of the quarterbacks in the league, and that's what your article is showing, are not Brady, Rodgers, even Cam Newton, or Roethlisberger. That's it. That's all there is. And everyone else is depending on 52 other guys and the coaching staff to bring it to the next level. I'm sorry, but Andy Dalton wouldn't be doing any better on the Dolphins than Ryan Tannehill is. Russell Wilson wouldn't be doing any better. Alex Smith definitely wouldn't be doing any better. He'd probably be doing worse. I mean, it's just a fact. So stop with this craziness and calling yourself a good analyst because you compare Ryan Tannehill to Tom Brady. That doesn't make you a good analyst. That's just, you know, that's just like saying that Scott Skiles wasn't as good as Michael Jordan. Well, thank you. Is that what I take to, I can get a job and be on the radio because I can make that analysis? Give me a freaking break. It's stupid. I mean, it's just absolutely stupid. It is more of a team sport than any other sport that is played because so many players are involved. You play one side of the ball. You don't play both sides of the ball. You're one of 11 guys, and everyone has to be doing their job. And you need a coaching staff to do it right. And it takes so much. It's so many variables. So stop saying that Tannehill's garbage, Tannehill's crap, and Tannehill's this and Tannehill's that. And also, you know what? Stop saying that Tannehill's going to be Brady or going to be Roethlisberger. He's probably never going to be that. We could go all the way deep in the playoffs and even win a Super Bowl if our team was good enough around him. It is just proven. It is proven. So the nonsense to me just needs to stop. And I'm hearing this from people who are supposed to be professional analysts. They're writing articles. They are the ones with the press passes. They are the ones on the radio. And their analysis is straight garbage. It is. It's just ridiculous. They just say things for ratings and for clicks. That's it. And Skip Bayless is another one. He say, oh, Michael Jordan this and Tom Brady that. Oh, that's all you do every day is go on there and talk about Jordan and Brady and how great they are. Wow, you're just such an amazing analyst. Why didn't I think of that? Give me a break, man. It gets so much on my nerves. It, like, literally gets me pissed off to listen to it.
Yeah, there's no next level thinking. And the thing with Tannehill is, man, people forget who we had before him. You know,
that's true.
He's getting the. Remember Jay Fiedler?
Yeah, Jay Fiedler was one of the better quarterbacks we had over 15 years.
We were complaining. I was younger. You know, this is when I was first getting into like my fanhood of the Dolphins. You know, watching Jay Fiedler teams. You know, early 2000s. But the thing is, man, people are, Jay Fiedler this, Jay Fiedler that. We were 10-6. We were 9-7. We were going to the playoffs, you know, and people were hating on Jay Fiedler. And what happened when Jay Fiedler left? Man, who was it? A.J. Feely.
I can't even. I don't even. I tried Cleo Lemon. You know, it's Gus Frerotte. I know.
We have somebody serviceable right now. like more than serviceable.
More than serviceable. Yes, he's more than serviceable.
We're like, oh, we need to get someone better. My God, no. You know how long it took us just to find him?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. It's just like saying, you know, you drove the crappiest car forever and you finally got a Toyota Camry and now you're complaining that it's not a Lamborghini. Well, you know what? Not very many people can have a Lamborghini, so enjoy your Toyota Camry because at least it's not like... station wagon, you know, like you used to drive. I mean, yeah. That's like, it's pretty much that, man. Hey, before we go, man, anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
No, I think we're good. I think the team is, man, we're on that verge. We're on that verge of maybe saving this year. You know, one more win and, man, we're right back into it.
I need two more. I got to be honest with you. For me, to call it the year has really turned around, I need more than just a win against Houston. You got to beat New England. I'm sorry. I hate to put that high an expectation on it because I know it's not a real high likelihood. You do that and your season has turned around. It absolutely has turned around because not only have you proven that your team was more what you thought it was than what it's been showing it is, but you win and you beat a big-time division rival on the road. It's a tall order. But it's what I need. But first things first, I got to beat Houston. It's going to be a closer game, guys. It's just going to be a closer game. It ain't going to be 38-10. And if it is, I'll be surprised and extremely happy. Extremely happy.
Could you imagine that? Another blowout win?
Win would be huge for the confidence of this team. It really would be. And especially for the confidence of the fan base. That's for sure.
I feel like, if we blow these teams, talking crazy. If we blow them out, can you imagine, like, the family show blow up and then our chesters are gonna be pumped up. Our heads are gonna be up in the air heading into that New England game.
Yeah, they'll have even more belief in their coach. Do they need this win going into New England to have a prayer of having the mental state would it take to beat New England to have confidence? Because you need some confidence. You can't go in there, I hope we just don't get killed. I mean, players go in there like that and they're gonna get killed. Yeah, I mean, that's what we saw the past 4 weeks. They were just going on the field, going through the motions. You go in there pumped up and ready. We need this win against Houston to even make that a possibility. A hope of a possibility. Just a win. A blowout win would be amazing, but just a point. Something. Just get the win. So I have been using a hashtag on Twitter, and I want to keep using this, guys. Fins begin again. Hashtag Fins begin again with a PHINS. Let's keep using that, guys. I've been seeing a little bit of use on it there. That's when we're talking about the Dolphins, man. I've been trying to use that hashtag a lot because I think it's fitting right now. So let's keep that drive going. Let's keep positive thoughts going towards now South Florida because we're going to be playing in Miami. Anything else, man, before we wrap it up?
No, it's going to be a great weekend.
All right, guys. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at UnsquishTheFish, of course. If you want to read Mika Romero's articles, watchnextyear.com. And what's your Twitter handle,
Mika? It's WatchNextYear.
Okay, and Twitter handle at WatchNextYear. All right, everybody, we appreciate it. Have a great day.